The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Honey, the online shopping platform that helps consumers save time and money, is building a Boulder office and looking for software engineers to join the team. Find out more at joinhoney.com/careers. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. We have a unique startup and tech community here on the edge of the Rockies, and we want you to know about it. The Boulder Tech Podcast features conversations with leaders, thinkers, and influencers, sharing their views on what's happening in Boulder's rapidly evolving tech scene. These interviews were recorded during the 9th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind, anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Episode 20 of the Boulder Tech Podcast features T. Chang, co-founder and chief designer at Crave, a San Francisco-based company designing and building sex toys with women in mind. Our conversation covers a lot, including how Crave's first product became the world's first crowdfunded sex toy, the difference between marketing products to women as opposed to designing products for them, the evolution of sex toys from taboo to objects of empowerment, and the simple, elegant brilliance of converting an Airstream to a mobile vibrator factory. So this is your first time at Boulder Startup Week, and why are you here?
Well, I'm here because I am part of this tour that we're doing at Crave called the Crave Pleasure Tour. We launched this about a month and a half ago. Basically, we have transformed a 1961 Airstream into a mobile vibrator pop-up slash vibrator factory. It is the craziest idea. Like, when I tell people, they're like, what? And we're starting to travel from San Francisco to various music venues, events, festivals, wherever we are invited. So we were invited here. So here I am.
Where did you get the idea to start a vibrator factory in the first place and then put it into an Airstream?
So starting the company. So that was about... Wow, almost 10 years ago, actually. It was around 2008. And basically, I've been working for a while as industrial designer for big corporations. And I just didn't really feel like I was designing the products I was meant to design. They're good products. They were, you know, products for women. But I just didn't really feel entirely fulfilled in terms of, like, this is what I want to contribute to the world. Just this one fateful visit to a sex toy shop in Boston. I was living there at the time, and I mean, it wasn't my first time at an adult shop, but it was the first time that it really dawned to me and really struck me that this whole buying experience and this, all the products were just awful. And at the time in 2008, it was the recession, so I didn't exactly have like a full-time job. I was kind of freelancing here and there, but really I was looking for my next thing. And I guess just kind of all the stars sort of aligned. And I was like, you know, pleasure is really important. And women should not have to put up with crappy sex toys. I mean, they should be just as sophisticated as any other products, you know, one would have in their life, like cell phones, laptop, etc. But if you look at currently the landscape of products, it's just... it's almost like a gag gift. It's a joke. It's like dolphins mashed up with a penis. And it's like, what are you, what? So that's kind of what started the idea back in 2008.
Were you working when you walked into that sex toy shop in Boston on that fateful day?
I had a freelance client doing just some graphic design, you know, here and there, nothing like that really was interesting. Yeah. And I guess I was just in a space of thinking about like, what else is there? I mean, at the time I was already feeling like, okay, I knew I wanted to design products for women because that was an area that I felt very strongly about as an industrial designer. Being in the industrial design profession, like many professions, it's completely male dominated. And when it comes to products that people use, it is even more important, I think, for female designers to be part of that conversation, to be part of, that table so that they can make decisions so that you have both male and female perspectives represented. And when I started working in various you know, at a consultancy, at a in-house company, you know, at a factory, I was typically the only female designer there. And so I was really alarmed. And then that made me realize like so many products are not really designed for women. They're just kind of marketed towards women. So that's why you have the whole like shrink it and pink it kind of thing where, oh, just make it pink. Women will buy it, you know, and it's just a really ridiculous way of looking at things. So so I already felt kind of pretty strongly about designing products for women, and walking to a sex toy shop was just kind of when like the light bulb went off and that like, this stuff is terrible. And I mean, it's also so terrible that like as industrial designer, I didn't have to do too much to like raise the bar a lot more, you know. It's kind of where I...
So did you just sort of walk out of the shop that day and just get busy designing, or how did you get from there to...
Yeah, so I after I got over it, I didn't buy anything, obviously, because I was just like really disappointed. Because actually, I really tried hard to find a product in there, and I even asked like the salesperson at the time. I was like, you know, do you have anything that's just a little more, I don't know, better or high end? And like she pointed to this like rabbity thing. It was just like, well, we sell a lot of these. And I was just like, oh my God. And so I walked out and just, it was just boiling the back of my head. And I was like, okay, this is something interesting. And I kind of wanted to sit with it for a little bit because I had other opportunities in the past to kind of start my own thing. Like I designed some home accessories and some furniture, but I just didn't feel like there was a really strong mission behind it. I love designer furniture. I love all that stuff, but I just didn't feel like that was the best suited for me with my skill set. And so I basically walked out of there and just kind of let it boil in my head for a few days. I had a freelance gig, so I did that. And so it just kind of was in the background. And then I just kind of decided just to start going. I guess, you know, for a lot of designers, the first step is to really look at the market. So when I really started to pursue this idea, I did a lot of research online to figure out what else is there, because so many inventors / designers, they come up with an idea and they think they're the only one who came up with it. But in reality, most ideas have already been done under the sun. So I did a lot of research before I kind of started actually designing, like put the pencil to the paper and started sketching.
And how did you get from that point to an Airstream?
Let's see, 8 years later. So definitely took a while. So I came to Crave only about 7 years ago. Okay, so let me clarify. So when I started my first company called Incognito, it was designing sex toy products, but it was like sex toys meets jewelry. It was a very different idea. It was about having luxurious products that made you feel, you know, very adorned, and it was like, you know, treating yourself kind of thing. And I started that company. I launched the company, and a year and a half into that, I was at a trade show where I was already meeting with my current buyers. I bumped into my now co-founder, Michael, who actually started Crave at the same time I started my company pretty much in 2008. But he didn't have any products. He was actually at this trade show to just kind of, you know, scope out sort of like what's in the market, you know, what's kind of missing, you know, what's out there right now. And he had seen my products, like these like jewelry nipple vibrators and like these bracelets and stuff. And I think someone at the show told him about my brand and like, you know, T, this female designer, she designed this. And he was just like, oh, really? And because, you know, as a guy, he started a company for very similar, almost the same reason, is that he also identified it was a horrible buying experience. The products are terrible. Pleasure is important. And if you kind of can solve that, it could be a really big business. And so he had started the company, but he was wise enough to know that if you're designing sex toys for women, you should probably get a female designer, you know? Like, mm-hmm. he's a smart guy. And so he had actually not, like, he didn't jump in and, like, started trying to create products or whatever. They were in deep research mode where they talked to tons of women about their experiences and what they're looking for, what they didn't want. And from that, he realized that you really need to bring a female designer on board. And so he didn't have any designs at the time. He was actually seeking out a female industrial designer, which I was like the perfect person for. And we just happened to bump into each other at a taxi line at the trade show. And he saw my name tag. He was like, T, oh, yeah, I've seen your products. And then we just kind of started talking, just like totally hit it off. And so basically, net of it was that he really wanted me to join his company, but I already had my own company. So he ended up buying my company to bring me on board as co-founder and head of design. So since then, I've been with Craig. So it's basically like started a startup and then sold it to another startup. And then I was like back at sort of at zero a little bit. But with Craig, we had a lot more financial resources and a lot had a lot more support. So that helped, you know, that created a new chapter in Craig. So long wind of saying from... After I joined Crave, we spent about a good 4 or 5 years just really honing in on the products. We launched the company through crowdfunding, our very first product. It's called the Duet. Technically, it's actually the world's first crowdfunded sex toy. This was back in 2011, I believe. You know, today, these days, you know, everyone does crowdfunding, right? Like any project, any whatever. It's like that was kind of the first. And also today, like investors, that's one of the first thing they ask is like, oh, have you done a crowdfunding thing for it? They want to kind of gauge if there's really, you know, actually a market for it. Mm-hmm. So we did that with a Duet and we were trying to raise $15,000 and we did that within 48 hours. And by the end of the campaign, we raised over $100,000. So it was, you know, really successful. And we shifted and launched the company. And since then, we've continued to push out products. But we have never, how do I explain it? Like our whole company, we are so focused on making the best product possible. We are full, we are actually, we are completely a team of product people, engineers. I'm the only industrial designer. But basically, we really want to get the product right. And after 5 years, we realized like we were getting there and that there's really a real market resonance with this. And so with the Airstream is kind of our very first time creating a marketing campaign that is in front of consumers to kind of connect with people and to show people what modern sex toys can look like. So that's kind of how we went from, you know, after we spent a lot of time making sure that the product is right, then we're like, okay, we're really ready to kind of emerge as a mainstream brand.
It seems that's really smart to get your act together before you really like throw it out there. And
I mean, my co-founder and I, and also the team, we really, I mean, also a lot to Michael's credit is that, you know, we wanted to grow slowly and at the same time, strategically, you know, we have investors, but you know, they're amazing that they don't try to pressure us to, you know, cause sometimes investors can just kind of pressure a company to grow. And then at their detriment. And for us, it just was a really great natural progression and, you know, we're doing well. And so, yeah. I mean, one of the reasons also for the Airstream is also this is kind of like the backdrop of this is as an adult toy company, unfortunately, a lot of the tech companies that just emerged in the last 10, 15 years, you know, like Facebook and whatnot, Pinterest, Instagram, I mean, now Instagram is part of Facebook. We are not allowed to advertise whatsoever. That is something that is, you know, very can be really challenging because social media marketing is really the main way people market these days. I mean, mm-hmm. That's where a lot of, you know, people are not spending money on, you know, billboards and radio ads or like, or like TV commercials, you know,
right.
It's just completely shifting. And yet all of that is not available to us. And it totally pisses me off because, you know, they kind of lump us in this area of like, oh, you're just kind of part of that pornography and all that stuff. But we're, you know, we're about women's empowerment, you know, and all that stuff, but they don't care. So part of me, I'm just kind of like, fuck it. Well, we're just going to get on the road and show them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It seems so, I mean, I get it kind of, but it just seems so ridiculous when really sort of the stigma around sex toys is dissipating, is evaporating.
Yeah, it slowly, it totally is. I mean,
you know, and the same thing with cannabis. You know, you can't advertise cannabis on Facebook. Meanwhile, it's legal in half the states. And it's a very, really kind of a mainstream thing now.
Yeah, it is a really is good parallel, you know, between cannabis and it's emerging. There's a need, real need for people, you know, for certain types of products, cannabis and whatnot. And also with, you know, pleasure products as well. You know, it's just, it should not be any different than any modern consumer products, just like, you know, cannabis and, you know, people need, you know, medicine, they need, you know, self-care. And, you know, there's just one avenue that they can go, you know, into.
Right. Like, could you advertise tampons on Facebook?
I believe you can advertise certain menstrual products. Yes. Yes, you can. And even though, and I know a few founders who kind of ventured into that. And even for them, that's a challenge. It's like, this is just Mother Nature, man. Like, why can't we, you know?
Right.
So it's really.
So you hook up the Airstream and hit the road and you take it to Boulder Startup Week and music festivals also.
Mm-hmm. We went to Coachella. We went to a party that was during Coachella during that time. We went to Dinah Shore. It's the one of the biggest lesbian pool parties like in the world. Also in Palm Springs. Let's see what else. At the moment, we're our plan, we hope to go to LA Pride in a couple of weeks. Our schedule is just kind of as events emerge. And so they're not like, we don't have the rest of the year planned out. It's like more like the next month planned out.
but from what I witnessed when you were parked outside of the Boulder Theater for Ignite Boulder the other night, it seemed like it was a big hit.
That was fucking crazy. I got it.
You guys were mobbed. It's fine.
Am I allowed?
We're not actually on the radio. So
oh, okay. Yes, okay. So it's fine. Okay. That was insane. I've never experienced anything like that. It was literally like a feeding frenzy. I had one woman. She came up to me. Like, it was after all that and kind of died down. I had to put the stuff away because I had to move the Airstream. She came up to me and gave me a credit card. I was like, just give me whatever you have. And I was just like, okay, can you narrow it down? Do you want the necklace? Do you want something, you know, whatever? And, but I, it was just so wild. And especially, I love also just the range and the gamut of women that were there, young, you know, older, and just everything in between, mothers, and just, and because I was so overwhelmed, because I was only, you know, I'm the only person from Crave ringing right now, that even the customers started selling for me. They're like, hey, T, they want to buy this. And then I was like, okay. And then I'll transact. And it was just this, just amazing. Yeah. So.
Is that the typical response, or that was above?
It was intense. I mean, that was a lot of transactions within an hour and a half. So it was really crazy.
Very condensed.
But usually it's definitely a lot like, you know, more chill in terms of like you have, I'm usually at a place for, you know, like maybe 5-6 hours. And so people trickle in, people trickle out. And so it's just a little more chill and manageable. But that was like, you know.
We had met a couple of days earlier when you started parking behind Dojo 4 in downtown Boulder. And I'd seen, you know, every time I happened to walk by or look back there, there was at least a couple of people talking to you. And being in Ignite that night and hanging out front, you know, before and after, and saying like, oh, yeah, there's a, you know, let's face it, it's fun to say, yeah, there's been a vibrator factory parked behind our office for the last couple of days.
I know.
Oh, there it is over there. And then people are like, oh, my God. And just like, I got to go. And then just booking across the street, beelining
to
your place.
Totally, totally. And one of the things that's so interesting is because this vibrator factory, you know, not only is it just like a retail shop, but we have a vibrator bar in the back. And basically it's an area where people can build their own vibrator. So, and let me clarify this. So one of the reasons why we're doing this, like we are a manufacturer and we have a factory in downtown San Francisco. And I remember at the inception of the company, when I told you we launched this crowdfunding thing. I mean, where all that came from originally was that we had to meet the order because we had all these thousands of orders we had to ship and we were completely shorthanded. So we created a build party. Okay. So we invited our closest friends and, you know, all these people came just to our factory and helped us. Manual labor. We had a like huge, you know, party. We like, you know, had food and stuff, but people were helping us build the first initial batch that went out. And during the build, I noticed people were just having so much fun and having the most hilarious but yet open and sincere conversations around all sorts of things. And it was something that just really struck with us, just that whole experience. And since then, we've done it at South by Southwest. We've done it at Cal Academy of Science, you know, and we've done it at Museum of Design, Atlanta. And so we're like, this is really cool. We could really just kind of see if we can take this on the road. So basically, we have this kit that people can buy, and so they sit down with me or whatever, whoever, you know, technician is there, and we'll help them, you know, in like 15-20 minutes to build their own vibrator. And so people have been coming in, and we've been doing a lot of builds during this week, and it's just so cool. Like some, you know, this one woman was like, I have trouble building my IKEA furniture and I just built my own vibrator. And it was just so amazing. And the other woman like, oh my God, I just feel like this is so special. Like that I'm owning like my pleasure because I'm actually like building my own vibe. Like how empowering is that? And so, you know, just the response has been just super awesome.
So someone can come into the Airstream, sit down with you for 20 minutes and walk out of there with their own custom vibrator, or it's going to be ordered and shipped later?
Oh, no. They build and they take it home with them. Like the kit, they get a kit right then and there. And then at the end, you have a functional working vibrator.
I have to ask, I mean, how does that work? Is that something we can you can walk us through?
Yeah, totally, totally. So I'll do my best, you know, because usually it's a very visual thing, but basically it's a kit, you know, imagine like a Lego kit. You have all these different little pieces. And so we have fixtures and like we provide, give you a little screwdriver and a couple of screws, and we have all these like other like silicone grease and Loctite. And so the kit is created in such a way that we instruct you, like first you put the motors into the silicone sleeve, and then you have to put silicone grease around the silicone, and then you put the metal, you know, onto it. So basically we guide you step by step, just like we would in the factory, like our technicians in the factory. And it's very similar to how they would put it together. And we also do quality checks, because the product that they're building is called the Duet Pro. It's a programmable vibrator. They can take it home, plug into their laptop, and then play with all the different vibration settings and download exactly what they want. So it already has settings on the Vibe, but they can truly, truly like customize the patterns. And so after they build it, we do quality, and it's fully waterproof. So we have these pumps, air pumps, that you put the product in and it pumps some air into the product to see if there's any kind of movement of air to make sure that's fully water sealed. Mm-hmm. So we go through QC and then we turn it on. I walk them through the product, and at the end they have a awesome clitoral Vibe called the Duet Pro.
That's amazing. It's so different and so from left field in so many ways, but also so clearly obvious, the value of it, the need for it. It must be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I love my job. I mean, it doesn't matter how hard it gets. It's just, I freaking love it. And it doesn't matter how many times I've been doing the build. It is just so much fun to see the women, or even the men, you know, I've had men build this as gifts, you know, give to their significant others. And just their face lights up when they, like, you know, the thing is moving. It's like, I built this. And also just the conversation. And it really just, you suddenly realize, like, this vibrator, which is like this, I think has had this such dirty, you know, connotation in our society. Like, you're suddenly in this open space, you're building this, and it's cool, and it was fun. And there's just like, there's nothing to it. There's nothing weird about it, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, it's got me thinking, in a way, I feel like maybe this is a leap and will be totally cut out, but sure. It just got me thinking, like, what inspired you is, in a way, what inspires me with music to be, you know, interestingly enough, or coincidentally enough, mm-hmm. The Vibrarian.
I love that. I really love that name.
But you were saying you were inspired because you walked into that sex toy store in Boston that day, and there was this like, this is it, really? Because mm-hmm. you knew that there was something that could be better. And in a way, it's kind of sad. I don't know if that's the right word, but just it's a drag that most people who go into that store don't really look at it like that. Yeah. Like, this is what it is.
Absolutely. Because they're just like, I have to make do with what's there.
Yeah. And that's how I feel when I walk into a restaurant and the music sucks. It's like, oh man, you know, you are totally killing the vibe right now. Mm-hmm. This place is amazing. Mm-hmm. The food is fantastic. It's all good. And the music is like, I'm not coming back because of the music. And I don't know, I get the satisfaction of presenting something, because then when I get an opportunity to play some music somewhere that's not like what people have usually heard before, it's just like, oh my God, I did not know that this was possible.
Exactly. Like, it's just people do not know these things are possible until you present to them the possibilities, and they're like, oh my God, this is so much better.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So to just give people those options, I mean, in this world today, we're all in our own feedback loops in a way, in terms of the digital world and what it gives back to us. And we're in our little bubbles. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to have things that kind of break you out of that.
Absolutely.
And show you that there could be something more. I mean, even you met your partner standing in line at a cab stand. Maybe we wouldn't be sitting here right now if you had dialed up Uber.
I mean, my business partner, I mean, Michael and I mean, it's completely serendipitous how we met. And it's, you know, I would have continued with the business, obviously, but I'm pretty sure it would have taken me a lot longer. You know, even though it's been almost 9 years, we would not be at the scale that we are, and the profitability and all of that had not been with him. I mean, because he brings a totally different set, but yet complementary skill set to the company. So
what are your plans for the next 5 years?
Oh my goodness, I hope I can retire. No, just kidding. I would love an exit in 5 years. No, I'm just kidding. The next 5 years, I would really, truly love if Crave became a brand that people come to trust and the number one go-to brand for pleasure products of all different kinds. And I, so that's what we're doing.
Well, I wish you all the best with that. From all appearances, it seems like you're definitely on your way to that.
I hope so. I mean, some days it can look kind of dark, like today, yeah. You know, and some days can feel really, really good. But, you know, I feel like when you start something, I remember when I was thinking about starting a company, I was like, you know, whether I succeed or not, when I go to my deathbed, like when I'm on my deathbed, you know, I want to feel like, hey, I gave it a good old college try. Like at least I tried. I don't want to be on my deathbed being like, oh, you know, I really wish I had tried that. And instead, even if I failed, I would have been like, fuck yeah, you know, I tried, you know? So that's kind of my attitude. So, you know, even if we don't, whatever, I don't know, you know, but I'm really enjoying this journey and I'm having fun.
Well, that's great. And, you know, I mean, as far as wanting to feel content at that last moment, it seems sort of like trite or cliche, but it is really such an important thing to keep in mind. I mean, isn't there an app? You heard about this Croak app that reminds you, like, however many times a day you tell it to, it gives you like a little quote or something that just reminds you, like, yeah, you're going to die one day.
You know, okay. I do not think it's more. Okay. I am completely in favor of being completely cognizant of the limited number of days that you have on Earth. That's actually an area that I'm at the moment even, you know, very fascinated by, because sex, as you know, like death is very taboo. People don't, they're not comfortable talking about it. They don't want to talk about it, but yet everyone has to deal with it at the end. And so very much like sex toys, I think there's a lot of opportunity there. So this is my free nugget to all of you guys listening, but like, you know, death is really a huge industry that is absolutely necessary, but yet because of the taboo and all of that, we really haven't really rethought that experience. It could be so much better than what it is now. And I hope, you know, people work on it. And I think that'd be really awesome. So yeah, I think about that all the time.
Well, it's there waiting for all of us. And on that upbeat note.
Yeah, awesome.
T from Crave Design, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That was T. Chang, co-founder and lead designer at Crave. Learn more at lovecrave.com. Follow Crave on Twitter at followcrave and follow T at designer T. That's T-I. Episode number 20 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week Culture Track sponsor PopSockets. This is the last interview recorded for the Boulder Tech Podcast during Boulder Startup Week. I've enjoyed speaking with a variety of people connected to Boulder's tech and startup scene, and I'm excited to continue. We'll be back soon with new episodes and are open to your suggestions on who we should speak with and what we should cover. Shout at us on Twitter at Boulder TechCast or email me at joel@conduitmusic.co with your ideas. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Matter, Zayo, Google, and Boulder Engineering Studio. We're also presented by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio and to KGNU Community Radio for the recording gear. Our intro music is by Echodeck, that's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Hear more at echodeck.com. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@thevibrarian.co. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.